Good morning. This morning I've chosen to talk about a trial and denial. John chapter 18 is where I've got where I'm going to make some of my remarks this morning. We'll be in the Gospels. This morning I want to look at John's account of Jesus' trial and Peter's denial. I like the way that John tells a story. I feel like he gives us a good sense of how these two events happen, and they seem to happen simultaneously. While Jesus is being held on trial, Peter, as we know, is involved in denying of Christ. And John has a unique way of interweaving these two events so that we get the sense that they're happening simultaneously. Even though Jesus' trial, we've studied this before, is one long trial with maybe six different phases, we're going to look at maybe just a little phase of that. And this morning we're going to look briefly at the trial and Peter's denial. To set the stage for what's going on here, we need to remember that at this time we have the priesthood who has determined that Jesus has got to go. He needs to go. They're worried about his followers. They're worried about this growing following that's happening. They are very concerned that he is going to lead a revolt. And they've heard the crowd call him the king. They have heard them say, "Hail to the king," as he's come through Jerusalem. And if he becomes the king, well, what's going to happen to them? They are very concerned about their power because, as we know, they were power hungry. And they realize at this time he has got to die. While his trial had those six phases that I mentioned, or many phases, we have Peter denying Christ. Remember, this is Peter who has been with Jesus from the beginning. This is Peter who is on the Mount of Transfiguration. This is Peter who saw Christ walking on the water. And when he saw him, he says, "Lord, is that you? If it is, let me come out and walk with you." This is the disciple, maybe out of all of his apostles, was probably the closest. Maybe he spoke to Jesus the most. We don't know, but spoke to him a lot. Seemed like Jesus had a lot of interaction with him. This is one we might say, was following Jesus so closely that if Jesus had stopped, he may have ran right into him. They were very, very close. Yet at this moment, Peter is denying him. I want to apply this story to us and ensure that as we read through this, we can see ourselves for who we truly are. That we can learn from Peter's mistakes. And maybe we can identify with Peter a little bit. First thing I think we can learn from this story is that Jesus knows we will fail him. He knows that. Jesus knew that Peter would fail him, and he knew how he was going to fail him. In Luke chapter 22, verses 31 and 32, it says, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he may sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. When you have not turned again, strengthen your brothers." Jesus knew exactly what Peter's future was. He saw not only that the failure that was going to happen in Peter's life, but he saw Peter's faith. He knew that there would be times where Peter was going to be strong and it was going to be following him closely. And he knew that he was going to be productive. And he also knew that he was going to fail him. Remember when Jesus met Simon, he told Simon, he says, "You know, I'm going to call you Peter." And I'm paraphrasing, I'm telling my own version. But he knew his future. And he knew that the name of Simon, there's a lot of meanings, but knew meant he would vacillate, or that he would blow to and fro. Well, he didn't want Simon to vacillate or blow to and fro. He wanted somebody that was more consistent. "So I'm going to call you Peter." Jesus knew what would happen. And here in verse 31, We have Jesus calling his old name, not his new name, but his old name, Simon, Simon. He basically tells him, you're going to go back to your old ways, Simon. And again, I'm paraphrasing. Simon, you're going to act like your old self. You're going to go back to the ways you used to be, the person you used to be. Peter, I'm warning you, you are going to think like you used to think, and you're going to act like the way you used to act. You know, when we were baptized, when all of us were baptized, we put on a new person, and we put off that old person. And this is kind of the way of looking at this. He was warning, now Peter, you're going to be like this old Simon. Don't revert back to your old ways, Peter. Don't go back to the way you used to act and think. But guess what? He warns him, and he says, tonight, you're going to deny me three times. You're going to deny that you even knew me three times. Verse 33, Peter said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Boy, he was so strong. I'll go to prison with you. I'll even die for you. That's how strong he was. Luke chapter 22, verse 34 says, Jesus said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day until you deny me three times that you knew me. You know, I think it's good for every single one of us in this room to be reminded that God knows everything about us. He knows our every thought. He knows our intent. He knew us before we were born. He knows what we're going to do later today, a year from now. He knows that our spirit is willing, but our flesh is weak. No different than Peter. So it's a good reminder for us to not deceive ourselves, but to see ourselves for who we truly are. Yes, God does love us in spite of our failures, and He can and He will use us. But for us to be so bold to say that we won't fail is probably inaccurate. Even the best of us, or the best amongst us, will fail. We have failed. Whether you're the elder of a congregation, you're an evangelist, you're a devout follower of Him of 60 plus years, or you're a newborn babe in Christ, the reality of it is that we're all going to disappoint Him and fail Him. And we may be super strong and super in love with Him right now, just like Peter was. I'm going to follow you to death. I'll go to prison. I'll do whatever. And not long after that, denying Him. I believe Peter was completely in love with Jesus. The night that he denied Him, I believe he loved Him. Matthew chapter 26, and if you want to go with me here, I'll take the time to turn and read this. Matthew chapter 26, verses 30 through 35. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out of the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, All of you will be with me and made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter answered and said to him, even if you are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you that this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And so said all the disciples. I won't deny you. Here is Peter. He's telling Jesus how life is going to play out. He's pretty confident, isn't he? No, this is how it will go down. This is exactly what I'll do. This is what I'm going to say. I won't deny you. As I read that, I'm reminded of a verse where Paul gives us warning. And it's as poignant today for us right now as it was for them. And that is in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed, lest ye fall. Just about the time that you think you've got it all figured out, and you're cruising along, and everything is going great for you, You've mastered life. You know exactly what it takes to follow Christ. Paul reminds them, be careful. For us today, be careful, because you may be closer to the edge of that cliff than you ever realize. Peter fails, I believe, for probably multiple reasons. Same reasons we do. But you know, I think Peter failed because he was prayerless. He failed because he didn't pray. Here we are back in the garden. He came to this place. And Jesus tells them as he leaves the upper room, as they're making their way to the garden, he says, Peter, let me tell you something. And again, I'm paraphrasing. Satan is coming after you. And before the night's over, you're going to deny me. And you're going to do it three times. You're going to deny you even know me. Satan is going to come after you. It's no different than the warnings that we have. We read of plenty of warnings. Well, guess what? Satan is out there like a roaring lion. Do we need to be reminded of that? Apparently we do. Luke 22:40 says, when he came to that place, he said to them, here is what you all need to do. Pray that you may not enter into temptation. Jesus is telling his closest followers, here's what you need to do. I'm going to go over here. You guys need to pray that you don't enter into temptation. You know, when we pray to him and we're communicating with him, it seems like we're much stronger, doesn't it? It seems like we are more in tune with him. It seems like we are closer to him than maybe normally. Have you ever had a time, and for those of you who are much older, you may be able to think back, or for some of us who are younger, maybe we can think back to younger days, where maybe we just didn't pray as much. Or do you ever remember a time where you just didn't pray at all? Whether that happened for a day, it happened for a week, happened for, I don't know, a month? I don't know your situation. Where you are prayerless, it's dangerous. It's powerless. I contend that Peter is prayerless and therefore he is powerless during the attack of the enemy. And Christ warned him, Satan's going to come after you. And here's exactly what you're going to do. Oh, no, that won't happen. No, that won't happen. You know, when we neglect to pray, we have no hope of standing strong. No hope. We have no hope of staying strong. No hope of standing strong. We have no hope of avoiding failure. Have you thought about that? We have no hope of avoiding failure. Such a reminder that we need to go to the Lord in prayer frequently. That's where this praying without ceasing comes into play. During the attack of the enemy, when we neglect prayer, we are powerless. And he clearly was powerless. Peter failed because he was with the wrong crowd. Another thing for us to be reminded. Kids, are you out there listening? Maybe I should say parents, moms, and dads, are you listening? When we are with the wrong crowd, it's the beginning of the end. He who walks with the wise becomes wise, and companions of the fools will suffer harm. If we hang out with people who are foolish, and that is people who know maybe to do the right thing and they just don't, people that don't care about doing the right thing, when we hang out with those people, we will come to ruin. It's going to happen. On the other hand, when we hang out with our brothers and sisters, we hang out with people that love doing the Lord's work, or they delight walking with Him, it will lead us into the blessings of this life. We all need to choose our friends wisely. And parents, we need to help our kids choose their parents wisely. Parents, moms, and dads, we need to choose our friends wisely. The people we hang out with are going to do one or two things. They're going to help draw us closer to God, or they're going to tear us further apart and further away. One of those two things is going to happen. Who is it you're hanging out with? Let's see in Peter's life who he started hanging out with. Luke chapter 22, verse 54, "Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house, and Peter was following at a distance." Well, that's interesting. That's not been the case. Luke gives us this account, and we know throughout Jesus' ministry, I just told you this, that Peter was as tight as a tick with Jesus. So close that if Jesus stopped, he was going to run into him. But now all of a sudden, he's following at a distance. Notice this change. I was close, and now I'm following at a distance. And then guess what? Verse 55. "And when they had kindled the fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them." Who's the them? Not followers of Christ. Peter's now sitting with the crowd who doesn't even acknowledge Christ, doesn't know Christ. He's sitting around them at the fire. Oh, this is nice. Ooh, are you comfortable? I'm comfortable. This is great. Oh, you don't know Christ? Yeah, I don't either. Oh, isn't he that guy that they're putting on trial tonight? Boy, such a shame. Oh, yeah, you hate him? Yeah, I hate him too. What a goofball. Yeah, that guy that thinks he's something. Huh. Boy, this fire sure is nice, isn't it? Why is Peter sitting amongst these people that don't follow Christ, that don't know Christ? What happened? What's he doing? Why is Peter among them? He is now distant from Christ. He's with a crowd who hates Christ. And the results are predictable. Are they not? Have we not seen this in our own lives or with other people? They're predictable. Peter is around them, acting like them, and now he's one of them. John 18:15, "Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple," and we know that disciple is John. "Since this disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest." This is really interesting, and I think very instructive for us. What we have in this moment of this arrest, of his arrest, everybody flees and deserts him. But now we have some of the disciples who are following him at a distance. Well, this is new. I don't know what's going on, but I think I'm going to lag back a little bit. Let's just see what happens here. John 18, verse 16 and 17. "So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the servant girl who kept watching at the door and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, 'You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you?' He said, 'I am not.'" This girl knew John and knew that he was one of the disciples, and now she wants to verify that Peter is one of them as well. But notice what Peter says, "I am not." All through the book of John, we read how Jesus says, "I am. I am. I am the door. I am the way, the truth, the life. I am the shepherd." But here we have Peter saying, "I am not. I'm not with him. I'm not part of them. I don't know him." John 18:18, "Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold and they were standing and warming themselves, Peter also with them, standing and warming himself." That's what verse 18 says. You have to believe that this conversation was not good. It wasn't productive. They probably were talking about Christ in a negative way. They weren't speaking highly of him. And Peter is doing what they're physically doing. Have you ever watched kids? For those educators, for those who are in the school system, you ever watch a good kid go bad? He is now physically doing what they were doing. Probably talking like them. He's identifying with them more than he was identifying with Christ. John then gives us more detail about his trial. Peter is no doubt hearing probably his trial at the very least. Maybe he's seeing it, possibly. And we read in John's account where we see Christ is slapped. And here we have Peter standing with the crowd that could care less about Jesus. And what are they doing? They're warming their hands. John 18 and 25 says, and let's just go to that. John 18 and 25 says, "Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, 'You are not also one of his disciples, are you?' He denied it and said, 'I am not.'" Luke tells us that this woman asked, and his response was, "I do not know him." Mark tells us that he denied it and says, "I neither know him nor understand what you mean. I don't even know what you're talking about." What? Amazing how dumb you can play, isn't it? I don't even know what you mean. I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Now that the heat is on, Peter is going to get out of there. Ooh, this is kind of uncomfortable. Ooh, I don't like this. They're asking me questions, and I probably should answer a different way, but I'm not going to, so I'm going to get out of here. He no longer needs to warm himself by the fire because guess what? His shame is burning him. He's not cold right now. He doesn't need to warm himself because he is so shameful. He's burning on the inside. And as he heads to the gate to try to get out of there, I want to get out of Dodge quick. He's trying to get out as fast as he can, and the rooster crowed once. And as he heads to the courtyard one last time, he's confronted. Verse 26 and 27. "One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him, whose ear Peter cut off, said, 'Did I not see you in the garden with him?' Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed." Aren't you the guy that I saw with him? Peter denied it, and we finally have the rooster crowing. Luke's account tells us, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." Matthew tells us even a little different, takes it a step further. He began to curse and swear. Because why? Well, I got to prove a point. I mean, me just saying I don't know him isn't enough. I'm going to start swearing. Because anybody that follows Christ would know that they don't swear. So I'm going to prove a point here. Can you believe this? I'm going to go to the extent of I'm going to start cursing to prove a point. I don't know him. This is a guy who was just so strong. Not a day ago, not an hour ago. "I will go to prison for you. I will die for you." Now I'm cursing. Peter was the guy who in the moment of triumph in Matthew chapter 16, when Jesus said, "Who do men say that I am? Thou art the Son of the living God." So confident and so close to Christ. Now he is operating in a totally different way of thinking. He is cursing. What started out as a little bitty lie to who? A servant girl? I couldn't even stay strong enough. I lied to a servant girl. It started out so simple. Has now escalated into further denial. An additional denial. And now I'm going to start swearing. This is unthinkable. You know, it always seems to go further than you ever thought. You remember that lie you told and you thought, if I just tell this, I'll get out of it and we'll move on. If I just at work fudge these numbers just a little bit, they won't know, but it sure tells a better story. And then it'll all be over with. Oh, great. Now I got more questions and now they're wondering why financially things aren't going well. And next thing you know, it's deeper and it's deeper and it's more and more awkward. Whatever it is for you, you remember that little incident that you thought wouldn't be a big deal, and now you're cursing to prove a point. Luke 22 and 60 says, "And immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed." And you know what? I'm thinking probably just when it can't get any worse, verse 61, "Then the Lord turned and looked at Peter." Maybe the trial had ended with Annas. Maybe Jesus was crossing the court. We don't know. But whatever it is, just when we thought it couldn't get worse, he sees Peter. He turns and looks to him. Can you imagine that look of disappointment? Can you imagine what that had to feel like? He predicted it. He told him it was going to happen. He's, oh, no, it won't happen. And here it is happening. Have you ever seen this look of disappointment from your parents? I saw it. They looked at Carrie this way all the time. I'm kidding. But seriously, think about it. You remember when that look of disappointment came upon you? It was sickening feeling. And they weren't Jesus. And they hadn't maybe predicted it like Jesus did. The Lord turned and looked at Peter and he remembered what the Lord said to him. Jesus knows we're going to fail him. Jesus knew that Peter was going to fail him. He knows that the best amongst us this morning are going to fail him. Some of us failed him last night. Some failed him this past week. Some this past year. Jesus knows we'll fail him. Not one of us is truly righteous. Remember how confident Peter was just before he failed him? You know, I think the real question for us is how do you feel when you fail him? Because that's really the important part here. How do you feel when you let him down? Peter, it says, wept bitterly. Wept bitterly. You know, the Greek says that is sobbing out loud. Other translation says wailed loudly. Peter is a grown man. You know, regardless if you're a man, if you're a woman, if you're a child, when we're confronted with sin, it should make us weep bitterly. It should make us sob. It should make us really remorseful. Here is Peter being reminded of the words that the Lord told him, and it has caused him to be so sorrowful that he is wailing. You know, when we sin, we must be able to see Jesus. I think that was the important part here. Jesus turned and looked to him and he saw him. And when he saw him, he realized, wow, what have I done? Because it wasn't clicking as they were asking him questions. It wasn't clicking as he had gone all the way to the point of cursing. But he saw Jesus as he turned and looked at him, maybe across that courtyard, and he went, what did I just do? What just happened? You know, that's a reminder for us that if we are continually looking to Christ, we are continually praying and talking with Christ, guess what? When we have these weak moments, it immediately causes us to go, what just happened? I've got to fix this immediately. You know, a really important point of this lesson is, guess what? Jesus fails no one. We know we're going to fail. We know we're going to make mistakes. But Jesus doesn't fail a single person. 2 Timothy 2:13 says, if we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. The good news is, Jesus didn't write off Peter. And Peter came back to him and came back to him quickly. He helped Peter move past that condemnation that he must have felt. And you think, well, how's Jesus going to bridge this gap? How's he going to handle his closest friend failing him in such epic portions? How's he going to handle that? How's he going to bridge that gap? What's God's attitude towards us when we fail? Yeah, he's sad. Yeah, he's sick. But he loves us, just like he loved Peter. And you know, all we've got to do to figure out how he's going to handle it when we fail him is look how he handled Peter. How'd he handle him? I invite you to go home and read chapter 21. Go read the very end of the chapter. What does he do? They had breakfast and he goes and he sits right down with Peter. Just like a loving parent does with a kid who's made a mistake. He goes right back to him. And he sits down with him. And he tells, basically, again, I'm using my words, I'm not done with you, Peter. I have future plans for you, Peter. And guess what? I need you to continue to follow me and continue to feed my sheep. Go read that chapter. It's awesome. See, God loved Peter more than Peter could really imagine. And God loves you and I more than we really understand. God won't fail us, regardless of what we have done, if we'll look to Him and we'll see Him in the moment, the situation that we're in, and we truly repent of that sin or sins, He'll forgive us. But we have to remember, just like Peter did when he looked to Jesus, we have to remember to look to Him. You know, we have two disciples that failed miserably, and we have two totally different outcomes. We have one that looked to Jesus and immediately saw his mistakes and wanted to do a quick 180. And we have the other one. What'd he do? He failed. He felt remorse, and he felt like he couldn't turn to Jesus. He thought that it was too big for him to handle. Well, guess what? When we fail, it is too big for us to handle. It's, of course, too big for us to handle. So that's why we have to have Jesus. That's why we have to go to God and look to Him for His help and His forgiveness to help us do a 180. Unfortunately, Judas didn't do that. He thought it was too big for him, and it was. And so how did he handle it? We talked about this in the kids' class. He took his own life. So sad that he couldn't see what Jesus could do for him in this moment of mistake. In conclusion, you know, I love this story. It reminds us that we have failed Him. We will fail Him. And I'm not condoning it. And I'm not making light of it. But that's the truth. He tells us that we all will fall short. But guess what? What a great story we can read of Peter, and a great reminder for us of somebody that was super confident. Oh, so are you confident this morning? I'm confident what Jesus can do for us. And I am prayerful that I won't make mistakes. And I'm prayerful that I'm committed to Him and I will always stay committed to Him. But just like Peter had a major slip up and was confident that I'm not going to slip up, he got called out quickly about that. And we need to look to Peter and what he did. He looked to Jesus. Jesus comforted him. Jesus forgave him. And Jesus loved him and understood. Let's learn from Peter. Let's, of course, never deny him. And remember that denying him comes in so many different forms and fashion. With friends, with co-workers, whoever it may be. But it's important for us to stay strong, to not turn our back on Him, and remember that the people that we hang out with, that we choose to be around, one of two things is going to happen. And I hope that it's us drawing them into Christ. I'll leave this message with you this morning. If you find that for whatever reason you haven't been prayerful, you haven't looked to Christ, and you have, for whatever reason, stepped away. You're not following Him as closely as you used to. You are like Peter, who distanced yourself. Get back to Him. Get back close, so that when He stops, we run into Him. Stay close to Him. And we know that as we draw close to Him, He will draw close to us. We'll offer the gospel invitation. If you've not named Him, and you want Him to be your Lord and Savior, please come forward as we stand and sing.